Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
So, this week, I don't know, good week.
Especially if your name's Deadpool.
Yeah, absolutely. Which we'll definitely be talking about here in a little bit, but not where I want to start out today.
Oh, okay.
So, but before we get going, you just had a trip to New York.
Oh my, yes. 24 hours in New York City.
Blah.
Wanted to try and see if I could find Gabriel Urbina and the folks from Wolf 359, but I just was cutting it too close.
Yeah.
So
anyway, just wanted to, hey.
Hey.
So this week, before we get into movies and Deadpool, since we teased it so much last time, we're getting into convention season.
'Tis the season.
And with that are, of course, the stories. And so I wouldn't necessarily call this conventions behaving badly, which was our theme all through last convention season. This, what was happening recently was far more along the lines of, this is why we can't have nice things.
Well, I was going to say, it's one of those things with where there's the rights and the responsibilities.
Yeah.
You know, there's cons behaving badly, like what we've held up to and pointed at and laughed at for the last year, mm-hmm. with, you know, see also Dragon Con trying to get rid of their abuser on staff, see the bad policies, see this, that, and the other thing. But the other half of it is there are times when there's the attendees behaving badly.
Yeah.
And an attendee behaving badly over enough time will kill a con just as dead as bad policies.
Yeah. So what spurred this on, a couple weeks back, there was a convention in National Harbor, Maryland. So just in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah.
It was held at the Gaylord Hotel. It was called KatsuCon.
Gesundheit.
It's a anime convention. And it had a number of problems. Now, the fire alarm that went off was a fire alarm that went off. It
sure.
could have been pulled. I haven't heard anything about that other than anime convention cosplay not really being designed for February in Maryland.
No.
But the problem was there was a lot of damage done to the hotel that can be directly attributed to the convention goers. The one that always sticks out with me is somebody punched a wall and then left a note over it that said One Punch Man was here.
How sweet.
So making it clear that it was related to the convention. There were people going around to overhead exit signs and jumping up and slapping them down. The one that a lot of people focus on is somebody flooded their room, which not only damaged their room, but the adjacent rooms.
And I'm sure the people underneath them were thrilled, too.
Yeah. And it was... So it's not something that necessarily gets blamed directly on the convention, but it's where the community has to come together and say, no.
No. But more than that, I mean, okay, on behalf of somebody who's worked local itty-bitty cons before, I have been the one that has had to pull out the plastic out of my pocket to pay for a comforter that was... soiled, shall we say.
Sure, let's go with that.
By one of the con attendees. Did I do anything to that comforter? No. Hell, I work in the bedding industry, for God's sake. I could have gotten them one for free. But no, I had to pay for this thing because someone at the con decided to do things that normally should not be done on top of comforters.
Right. So another thing, and this comes out around the same time, but in a completely different version of fandom,
mm-hmm.
there is the furry community. And the reason I bring up the furry community is they have their conventions, and...
Do they corral them?
You know, I was knew you were going to go there.
I'm sorry.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why you need a 7-second delay.
So this is why I have an edit feature.
Oh,
but one of the big Seattle conventions called Rainforest, because most furry convention names are puns. Vancouver, Furlandia down in Portland. But the point is, that on a functional level, a furry convention doesn't get run any different than any other type of fan convention. And so
they ride roughshod. What?
This is, you know, if we ever get cards and letters, it's going to be about stuff like this.
Well, that means we'll get cards and letters. Awesome.
So
anyway. Maybe PETA will write too.
Anyway. Why? 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 There's times I ask why. Anyway. They had a convention running for several years. I think this year would have been their ninth or tenth. But for the last 5 years, they basically hadn't been paid. Okay, what I'm about to relay was relayed by the outgoing convention chairperson about why this year there was not going to be a convention. And what she stated was that, when she had joined the convention administration in 2011, that, she got to see reports. And one of the things they always got as a hotel report that included whatever damage had been done to the hotel. So we're back to the...
Yeah.
And they had never paid a lot of attention because they were never asked to pay for anything. In other words, and the damage had never been enough to... I don't know why, but...
There's a certain level that the hotel can just smile and write off if they're making enough money.
Right. And that is what had happened over years. The thing they hadn't been paying attention to was the fact that it was an ongoing thing.
That this is something that was a recurring problem, and sooner or later, the hotel is going to cut its losses.
Yeah. And that's what happened. Last year, they had come up to the hotel. They had everything contracted through this year, through 2016. And their hotel liaison had prepared a contract for 2017-2018, and the hotel refused to sign.
Yep.
They said, nope, we're done. And it was accumulated damage. It was other issues that had happened with, people acting badly around the convention. And a lot of it was based on... One thing that had been outed was that the security staff, whoever was head of security, didn't believe in pulling badges.
What?
And the impression I got, and I'd have to go back and read the article to be sure, but the impression I got was their theory was they didn't want to discourage people from coming back. And the idea that if they enforced the policies with badge pulling, that would discourage people from coming back.
As opposed to encouraging bad behavior, which is what you're doing. So let me see if I got this one straight here.
Okay.
So you pull an idiot's badge,
mm-hmm.
which is, a step up from hitting them on the nose with a rolled up newspaper. You pull their badge. That person goes away.
Yeah.
In which case, problem solved. Or... you end up wearing out your goodwill with the hotel.
Much as what happened.
In which case, you don't have a hotel anymore.
Right.
In which case, you don't have a convention anymore.
Right. And on top of that, the other problem was when they tried to find a new hotel, they couldn't get anyone to pick them up because hotels talk to each other.
I was going
to
say, they don't exist in separate universes here. They kind of talk to one another.
So... yeah. Anyway, so that's sort of the flip side of, yes, you can have people behaving badly and that can be a problem, but there is, at some point, the convention has to take on a certain amount of responsibility of policing their community, or at the very least, making sure if stuff's going wrong, they're working with the hotel so that it's not an issue.
And it's not, I'm going to jump up on the personal responsibility thing here. It's not just the convention. I mean, they can have security. They can have people in the hall monitors or whatever it is. But it's just as it falls to the people who are attending the convention to keep an eye open, say something if something is going wrong at the con. It is the same incumbent responsibility that if something is going wrong, you tell somebody so that they can stop it. So they can try to fix it, so they can get rid of the people who are causing the problem.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the whole community suffers.
So I haven't heard any upshot of what might be going on with KatsuCon, the anime convention. I do know that the following weekend, the exact same hotel was hosting MAGFest, which is a huge geek convention. It's like a gaming and music convention. A lot of the online video reviewers tend to use that as their big central convention of the year, because a lot of them are Let's Players and whatnot. So they were, and they've been in that hotel. And what I've been hearing is that there was sort of a spread out, we have to be really well behaved this year.
Yes.
Because of what this hotel suffered during the previous weekend.
Yeah.
And I've heard no horror stories coming out of MAGFest. So the message did go out of, hey, we really have to not cause trouble here. Because even though that other convention had nothing to do with us, we could get painted with the same brush if we're not careful.
Yeah, it's not just like hotels don't exist in a vacuum. Hotels exist in the little archipelago around the around the airport or wherever it is they are. And they talk to one another.
Yeah.
A local X number of local conventions draws from the same pool of people. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be going to a furry fest. I don't think you're going to be going to a furry fest. And yet, there is overlap between, in this area, Norwest Con and Rocky Con and Sakura Con and Jet City and Emerald City and Partridge and Pear Tree. So, yeah, the community as the larger whole is going to pay the price for the poor behavior of one or two idiots that, furry or not, need to get smacked on the nose with a rolled up newspaper.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been through my fair share of problematic conventions.
Oh.
You know, I was involved with Courageous Necrocon, which is one of the most infamous in the area.
Oh, Lord.
Which, interestingly, had a lot of the same problems as KatsuCon. And, you know, and this reason why it was only a one-time convention. I mean, by the end of the weekend, the hotel was done with us. I'm pretty sure, I mean, there was graffiti, much like KatsuCon. There was a hole punch in the wall, much like KatsuCon. Now, for points for originality, the beer slip and slide on the third floor, you know, that was at least unique and showed a certain amount of effort.
A for originality.
You know.
I will give them that.
But I also think that was the point where the hotel just went no. In fact, the only reason the hotel, I think, didn't kick us out that night was they just, you know, they wanted to just be done with us.
Yeah, I wonder why.
And so, yeah.
You'd do that on the main floor so you don't have to worry about the seepage down through the other levels.
You know.
Oh, sorry, was that out loud?
Now, given Courageous Necrocon, one of their problems was the whole...
One of? I'm sorry.
Yeah, was the whole, let's run 24 hours of programming.
Okay, let's pause.
Yeah.
For those of you playing the home game,
all right.
Courageous Necrocon was a combination Star Trek vampire convention.
Yeah.
24 hours of programming. Star Trek during the day, vampire stuff at night.
I called it the Were Convention.
What could possibly go wrong?
And we learned. It was the first Camarilla convention, because it was, what had happened was, okay, little digression, and I have extensive articles about this stuff on Fanboy News Network if you want to read about it, but when the Camarilla, or Camarilla, if you don't know how to pronounce Spanish words, was originally formed, about half of the original board of directors came from a Star Trek club. In fact, the original documentation for incorporation and the membership information just took the Starfleet International information and did a word swap to make it about vampires. And
I'm sorry, this is just too good.
And the Star Trek group that this was involved with was already working on putting on a convention called Courageous Con. So named because that was the name of the ship for that club in Starfleet International.
Of course.
And the person putting it on had the brilliant idea when we were forming the CAM that it had been floated, hey, you know, at some point we should do our own convention. And he went, wait a minute, I'm already doing a convention. what if we tag on the vampire stuff to the Star Trek convention and, well, we'll do it Star Trek by day, vampire by night.
We can put on a show. We can do it in the barn.
I mean, a lot of things went wrong. I mean, the volunteer coordinator ended up having a 101 degree temperature on site.
Only?
Had to be sequestered in their room, so that was going on. But then, yeah, you had the fan base. But part of that was, you know, if you have stuff going on 24 hours a day, the policing becomes tricky. Let's put it this way. It didn't seem to be the Star Trek side that was causing problems. Now, given the fact that the hotel not only had Courageous Necrocon in that weekend, but also was having a conference of nuns at the same time. That was probably not the best counter programming, cohabitation programming.
I just want to see the elevator conversations that happen out of that one.
The nuns all seemed very bemused.
They're not the only ones.
Well, I think the convention attendees were having a harder time with it than the nuns were. So yeah, that's a thing that happened that because
of Catholic Guild, it's a hard habit to break.
Because of the it just reminded me. So anyway, so that's convention. So we're coming up. I mean, in March, we have NorwestCon coming up.
Yay,
NorwestCon. And then there's going to be NorwestCon and then a weekend in between and then Emerald City Comic Con.
And Sakura's in there somewhere too, isn't it?
SakuraCon is the same weekend as NorwestCon.
Huh.
The both conventions are always Easter weekend because it's a time when they can get good rates.
Mazel tov.
We're going to see what's happening locally. Thing is, NorwestCon is a long enough standing convention and well run enough, you don't have these problems. They're pretty good on clamping down on, no, we don't accept that kind of behavior.
Yes.
And Emerald City, we already know from previous discussions and your experiences working there, they've got it down.
They do. I'm still going to be interested to see what happens with Reed Pop taking over this year.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the people that brought you New York City Comic Con, and that, there's nothing wrong that came out of that. So
yeah, so we will find out. Yep. The only thing I can think would right now that might have people up in arms is Jenna Coleman. She didn't pull out of the convention, but her schedule changed enough she had to change her days.
Oh, okay.
So she went from Friday only to Saturday and Sunday, which means people that bought Friday badges,
oopsie,
just to see her are one, I'm sure now trying to see if they can, which all those days are sold out. Thursday is the only day they have badges left for right now. Shock.
Go figure.
We'll see where that goes in the coming weeks. I'm going to be attending both conventions.
I'm assuming you mean NorwestCon and Emerald City, because you don't strike me as a weeboo. So
no. Yeah, no, I've never been to. Jill often goes to SakuraCon,
because she's like a deity level pantheon in there, and
that's certainly one way to put it. Yeah,
yeah.
So we'll see. So anyway, so last episode, which was when I always try and title the episode something based on what we discuss, and last episode was entitled "'Twas the Night Before Deadpool."
Yes, and all through the house.
And now, I have now seen the movie.
I have not.
So, you know what? Here's the thing about Deadpool. I'm not going to do spoilers, but Deadpool is a spoiler-proof movie. I could tell you everything that happens, and it won't matter because it's the experience of how they execute it, not what they execute.
Exactly.
In fact, the plot isn't, there's no surprises in the plot. It's just, it's the fact that they took so many of the aspects of Deadpool from the comics and successfully translated them to film.
Yes.
Obviously, anyone listening should probably know right now that for the last 2 weeks, Deadpool's been the number one movie in America.
Yeah, $135 million is nothing to sneeze at.
Which is saying something for an R-rated film.
It has been so long since I've worried about R-rated films. Yes, I understand that the goodly portion of the demographic is under 17. There's also a goodly portion that's over 17.
Right, but traditionally R-rated films have always not quite had the box office of non-R. I mean, that was something a lot of people talked about with Mad Max.
True, and look how well Mad Max is.
Yeah.
And furthermore, as far as the comic books world is concerned, I mean, you look at 300, you look at Blade, you look at Watchmen, it's simply appealing to a different aspect of it.
Sure. This was the one of the interesting things, though. After Deadpool came out, James Gunn, who made Guardians of the Galaxy,
yes,
amongst many other wonderful films, mm-hmm, saw it, loved it, and said, "And you know, I can see exactly why it succeeded." And he predicted that the studio execs would look at Deadpool and take all the wrong lessons.
Because that never happens.
And the last week seems to be largely proving him right.
So let me guess. Something to the effect of, this means people want R-rated stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to people want, let's talk about the idea that people want R-rated stuff. Because you were saying that there was just the announcement that...
So two announcements have come out, yeah, that sort of support they're taking the wrong lesson. The first is that Fox has announced they're going to do one last Wolverine movie with Hugh Jackman, which was always known.
Yes.
But that it will be an R-rated Wolverine movie. Now, given with the character of Wolverine, that's not necessarily a problem.
I was going to say, it's not like he doesn't swear like a sailor to begin with.
So. Right, and it just means they don't have to make the violence as bloodless. But the thing that's a little more telling is that it was just announced this week that when the home Blu-ray edition of Batman vs. Superman comes out, that it will have an R-rated cut. Which, Batman and Superman as an R-rated doesn't make as much sense.
No, it doesn't. Unless, well, I'm not even going to go there. But that's the... Saying that there's going to be a special R-rated cut is like the people who are jumping up and down and begging for there to be a PG-13 cut of Deadpool.
Right.
Why?
Yeah. And it doesn't work. I mean, if you watch Deadpool, it's R-rated because, well, it's kind of the nature of the character.
I was going to say, I haven't seen it yet, and I could say, would you like that alphabetically or in order of importance?
So the real lesson in this, Gunn's article, but you just see it on screen, it succeeded because the filmmakers had a passion for the character.
Yes.
Especially Ryan Reynolds, who made sure he was a producer on the film to protect the character.
With good reason.
And that they wanted this to be a big screen representation of the character. But the only thing that didn't translate was the weird thought balloons and caption thing, or the... which was playing up the idea of all these inner voices Deadpool has. Because it's very much a comic book convention, and they didn't even bother trying to translate that.
And at the same time, they still break the fourth... From what I am given to understand, they break the fourth wall more than just about any other movie. Oh,
again, in keeping with Deadpool's character.
Yeah.
You know, he's well aware of what medium he is in. And they add some things that work because it is a movie that stay with it. So yeah, it's... The lesson is... care about your characters, but also assume your audience, if they are going to come along with the ride, if you do the character right.
Yes.
And,
well,
which really is how James Gunn made Guardians of the Galaxy.
The thing of it is, you look at the movies that have succeeded, not just comic book movies, any sort of with a deep heart base of the fans are concerned. Mm-hmm. You go in with not only a smart script and a smart presentation, but you go in with the passion and the love behind it, and you get a much better product. See, fade back to back when they were first starting the Fellowship of the Rings and the Lord of the Rings movies, and they originally had somebody else cast for Aragorn, who later went on to be Lestat instead, and I don't mean Tom Cruise. And he couldn't, that actor could not understand why Aragorn didn't just take the ring from Frodo. And he lost the job, and they replaced him with Viggo Mortensen, who understood why. And you have a much better character, and you have a much better presentation.
Well, I even go more recently. This is much the same theory that made Force Awakens work.
Yes.
So, yeah. So the one good thing from this is clearly there are filmmakers out there that understand how this works. And so we are getting these good movies. The problem is you've got enough execs who are just looking for the shortcut. Mm-hmm. What's the shortcut answer? And you end up with R-rated Batman and Superman. Anyway, so that's... other than that, the only other thing is we got with movies coming up. Obviously, we're coming into March. So mm-hmm. that means we're coming into Superman versus Batman. We're coming into Captain America Civil War.
Now, there's one I'm interested in. Although they keep teasing, tacking on more and more and more and more. I mean, I swear I see more... Oh, let's put it this way. I see more spam dealing with Batman versus Superman. I see more articles pushed on my news aggregator on Civil War.
Yeah. And, you know, that's actually kind of a very telling thing.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we're going to see, again, with Marvel, you've got the proven track record.
Oh my, yes.
You know, we're not wondering what's it going to be like with Captain America. We already have an idea of what we're getting because of the rich history of the previous, 13 movies?
Has it been 13?
Getting close.
Damn.
You know, three Iron Men, two Thors, there's five. This will be the third Captain America. So we got two previous Captain Americas and two previous Avengers.
Yeah.
That takes us to 9. Then you've got the Hulk, brings us to 10. Ant-Man 11.
Finally got to see Ant-Man, by the way.
And so at least, okay, maybe not 13, but by the end of this year, it'll be 13.
Double digits.
Yeah. But we know what the Marvel Cinematic Universe looks like. We have an expectation that even at its worst, there's a certain level of quality.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, and the fact that Civil War is taking everything they've built previously and building on their story, sure, that's why articles. There's plenty to analyze, and not a single trailer has even hinted at what Spider-Man's role in the movie is going to be, even though we know he's in it.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't shown a clip of him. They haven't said anything about where he's going to fit in. So that means there's a whole aspect of the movie we haven't had spoiled by anything yet.
Yep.
Versus Batman versus Superman, where the entire third act, we basically know what's going to happen because the trailer told us.
You could have told me. I'm still trying to get over what's his bucket, who supposedly is supposed to be Lex Luthor, but did a far better job of channeling the Joker than he did Lex Luthor.
Yeah. So, you know, we will see what's coming. And we're finally getting our first pictures of Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange.
Heaven help us all, yes.
Well, it's looking decent. I have no reason to doubt. Everything I've seen, I have no reason to doubt.
I have no reason to doubt because it's Benedict Cumberbatch. And I will watch Benedict Cumberbatch read the dictionary. Mm-hmm. And it gets back to the whole issue of Hollywood and whitewashing. Because they just announced today... they're going to have the Iron Fist, and they're going to have Finn Jones.
Now, technically, that's not whitewashing, because Iron Fist in the comics is white.
Okay.
White with blonde hair. The problem is, the reason it's problematic, as we're segueing into TV, kind of this middle ground, the reason it's problematic is that it's part of the older pulp white savior narrative.
Okay, keep going. Because last I checked, he had an Asian last name. So
Daniel Rand.
There was it was hyphenated in the.
No.
Okay, go on.
No. Daniel Rand, Iron Fist from the comics, has always been, you know, a Caucasian blonde kid who got when his parents died, got adopted by the rulers of the hidden city of Kunlun, and taught their secret martial arts.
He learned their kung fu.
Yeah. But he was always, you know, not just white, but I mean, Captain America looking. And so, yeah, that's not whitewashing because they didn't take an Asian character and make him white. It's the white savior. It's Tarzan ruling the jungle. It's, or the, even the Phantom. It's the white guy coming in to save the populace of another indigenous people.
See also Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai. See also Dances with Wolves, see also. Yeah. Okay.
So it's a completely different problematic narrative. Just to be fair.
Okay, I stand corrected. It wasn't the most current problematic intrusion of Hollywood into everything. It was an older version of it.
Although you do bring up an interesting point.
That's why you keep me around.
And that is, since we're talking about movies, one of the movies that's opening is Gods of Egypt, which we have discussed in the past. That it's the look at all those white Egyptian gods. But here's what happened. Both the studio and Alex Proyas, the director, issued a preemptive apologies this week.
Wait, I'm going to pause for a second. I thought Ridley Scott was the director.
Of Gods of Egypt?
Yeah.
I could have sworn. Well, it's either that or Proyas did... Who did the Christian... No, that was Cameron Crowe?
No, I'm terribly sorry for the derail.
Okay. No, but I think it's Proyas is Gods of Egypt. Okay. I think Ridley Scott was another one. But the point is, you know, Cameron Crowe was very defiant in his white Egyptian casting, saying that I have to cast these names to get funding. Get over yourself. In other words, he was saying, yeah, I know it sucks, but it's the only way I can make my movie. Proyas and the studio both issued apologies saying, we in hindsight, we realize that casting a predominantly white cast as Egyptian gods was terribly insensitive. We should be able to do better. We'll work to do better in the future. Kind of apology we've heard before, but the fact is, what they're looking at is the fact that if you look at the last couple of years, when a movie gets tagged with whitewashing, it invariably flops.
Good!
Well, because, you know, we had discussed when it came out, Pan, and its problematic casting of Rooney Mara as Tiger Lily. It flopped. There was a movie, I can't even remember the name of it right now. It was an aviation movie, starred Bradley Cooper, and it had Emma Stone in it.
Oh yeah, where Emma Stone was supposed to be Hapa pilot in Hawaii. Right.
Right. And that was the Cameron Crowe movie. Was the one. So I think Ridley Scott was probably the gods of the Moses movie. But the point was that that movie flopped, and the Moses movie, which I can't even remember its name, but it was the movie where Christian Bale was playing Moses.
Exodus.
Exodus. By the way, my wife is in the back of the room.
Hi, honey.
Hi.
So, these movies have all tanked. And so Gods of Egypt is coming in getting some of the heaviest complaints about whitewashing. And I think proactively they realize we might have a problem here. We're probably not going to make our money back. What I'm hoping is that, you know, talking about studios taking lessons, maybe the lesson they'll learn is whitewashing. Maybe we should stop.
Yeah. I have to interject here. Okay. I have loved Ridley Scott since Blade Runner.
Right.
He does incredible movies. I love what he does with light. I like mythology. I enjoy Mediterranean mythology, mythologies of all stripes, Greco, Roman, Egyptian. I enjoy the mythology. I like movies where stuff blows up. So I am the target market for this movie, and I have zero desire to see it.
Yeah.
Well, and it has, and part of it is because of the whitewashing, and part of it is because it just looks dumb.
Yeah.
If I'm gonna watch beer, I'm gonna drink beer and watch a stupid movie. I want it to be at least a little better, higher quality of a stupid movie.
Yeah? Sure. So anyway, that now because we'd started this discussion with Iron Fist, this is a good segue. That most of the mainstream television stuff that I'm not gonna go over again because it's rinse repeat of what I've been saying in the last couple episodes. Yeah, Flash is great.
Supergirl's great.
Gotham is
circling the drain.
Yeah. So, however, we are a little over 2 weeks away from season 2 of Daredevil.
Yes.
And obviously, here's the thing that Marvel and Netflix have writing on Daredevil. They had great success with the first series. And they had tremendous success with Jessica Jones.
Oh, yeah.
So this will be their first, second season of a show. And the so the question is, will Daredevil maintain the quality that was seen in the first season and, of course, with what Jessica Jones showed us? Now, preliminary reviews generally say, yeah. One review said there was a, it's a little, I guess, one of the three reviews I saw said it was a, not quite as good as first season. The other two said, no, it really feels like a continuation of the first series. So right now, signs point to yay, especially because they are going, everything I've seen indicates they are following storylines directly from the comics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're introducing two characters that are tightly woven into Daredevil's mythos, that being Elektra and the Punisher. So, sure, I'm on board. When it comes out, I will probably watch it in 2 days like I did last time. great. And then everything I've been seeing coming out from the filming of Luke Cage looks fantastic. And we already got a sample because he was a character in Jessica Jones.
Right.
So we already have an idea of what to expect from him. We already know he looks great in the part. We already know he acts great in the part. So the only question is, what do we get story-wise from him?
Well, here's something that just crossed my mind, though, when you started bringing up Daredevil and Jessica Jones. Can we agree...
All right.
...that if you have Flash and Supergirl and the mainstream non-Netflix superhero stuff on television right now,
mm-hmm.
over on one side of the equation,
sure,
and you have Daredevil and Jessica Jones on the far, 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 far other side, where it is much darker, much more violent, much more head trippy,
mm-hmm.
than what it is on mainstream TV. Do you not think that also is contributing to the desire for the R-rated movies? Don't you think that is pushing a demand? Because, I mean, those of you who have listened before will recall that I had a difficult time getting through Daredevil because it was so violent. I still have yet to watch Jessica Jones because I have read enough trigger warnings on this thing. I don't know if I can watch it or not.
Well, I think, honestly, part of this, I think to look at it honestly, we have to look at the corresponding comic books these come from.
Okay.
Most of the DC-based television shows on broadcast are taking their cues from the Silver Age versions of the characters. I mean, The Flash and Supergirl were always much brighter characters, having much more colorful adventures. These were characters who were introduced in the 60s, but they were the, you know, very much the, this is fun, this is four-color comics at its best. Now, while Daredevil was introduced in the 60s, Daredevil came into his own and became a big deal comic in the late 70s under Frank Miller when it...
Need you say anymore?
Yeah, well, when it started pushing the idea, it started becoming part of the, there can be a wider audience for comics. There is a place for the shiny, sunlit world of Supergirl and the dark and gritty world of Daredevil. And furthermore, Daredevil was the leadoff comics of Marvel Knights, which was a darker imprint of Marvel. And then Jessica Jones was a Max series, which was, in essence, Marvel's answer to Vertigo. But unlike Vertigo, was still part of the Marvel Universe. The Jessica Jones comic, the TV series, takes its nods from the comic, which was exceedingly dark.
Yeah.
And going back to Daredevil, or not Daredevil, Deadpool, the Deadpool comics were always very violent and had a lot of innuendo where there was no way to do an adequate Deadpool PG. He had to be R-rated. The same with telling the brutal story of Daredevil or the really problematic story of Jessica Jones. You had to have those kid gloves taken off to tell the story appropriately. So when you talk about the fuel for R-rated films, I think what we're really saying is, if you want to tell a story that's true to the characters, A, make sure you're marrying the right character to the right medium.
Right.
Daredevil and Jessica Jones would not work as broadcast series.
Oh, hell no.
They'd be stupid in what they'd have to do to tone them down. So they work great on Netflix. On the other hand, a gritty Supergirl series would be awful.
It would be a laugh. I mean, I just had a gut level laugh at it, just at the thought of it.
Yeah. But so having Supergirl, who's always a brighter and sunnier story, on CBS is perfect. Because it is, as long as you are marrying the right character to the right environment to tell their story appropriately, I think that's what works. And that's why the lesson is that. You know, do the right by the character and by what serves the character. Don't force an artificial thing like an R-rated Superman versus Batman, because it doesn't serve the story. It doesn't serve the character. And the fact of the matter is, Warner Brothers, who you're hearing more and more stories where they are not certain about Batman versus Superman. They are becoming afraid. And part of it is because they're probably beginning to realize they didn't do the right kind of movie for those characters. They went dark and gritty where that doesn't serve that particular blend.
See also, how many times have I jumped up and down and ranted about grimdark, 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 right. Especially with Batman. Yes, I understand. It's Batman. It needs to be a grim and dark. And I have a tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm past it at this point.
Yeah. So I guess that's the... And the other thing I think that is, it's fine for something to not be for everyone.
Exactly.
The, you know, the push for a PG-13 Deadpool was somebody going, well, you didn't make something for me. It's like, it's not for you.
It doesn't have to... Okay, let's pause for a moment and look at the media conglomerate that is the mouse.
Okay.
You have happy little animated musicals.
Yep.
From Snow White to Elsa and everything in between.
Zootopia is coming up.
Zootopia is coming up.
Funny animals doing funny things.
Yes, with the occasional musical number.
Right.
Thrown in for good measure. You've got Touchstone, which is a division.
Yeah.
And it does a little more outside thinking outside the mouse.
Right.
Sort of stuff. Then they now have Star Wars.
Yeah.
And they now have Marvel. And they have all these different things. And just even if you drill down within Marvel, fractalize down into Marvel, you've got the lighter, happier things. You've got the deeper, darker things. It's serving the broad... eventually, they will saturate the market and they will have something for everyone. But just because they have something for everyone doesn't mean that everything is for everyone.
There is a filter I saw recently. Somebody took you know how you can make filters for Chrome or Internet Explorer, what browser you have to change things. So somebody built...
Luddite, sorry.
Okay, so somebody built a filter that took the word pandering.
Oh, right.
And every time a word of pandering anything, replaced it with making games for people who are different than me.
Doing things for people different than me.
Or people enjoying things not made for me. And
like how they did it was the same sort of thing with replacing political correctness with treating people with respect.
Right. And when you look at that, it's like, yeah, there are things not for you.
Yeah.
I think we were discussing at dinner tonight, neither of us are particularly the target market for Attack on Titan.
Nope.
That's fine. There are people that love it. It's not something for us.
Right. It does. It doesn't have to be for us.
Right. And it can still be a great success and not be for us.
Yeah.
So, I am also not the target audience for rom-coms.
Aww. Bless you.
I make an exception for things like Love Actually, but it's not my cup of tea. And that's fine. Doesn't mean they should stop making rom-coms.
Exactly.
Just means I don't need to spend money on them.
Yeah.
But this is also where you come to that final question of, the great thing about diversity is, if you make things that are for other people, if people can see themselves in something, they'll spend money on it.
How about that?
Witness, again, you know, one of the biggest indictments I saw on the whole whitewashing thing was, you know, they're saying, well, we need this white cast to attract an audience. And I'm saying, tell that to Oscar Isaac and John Boyega. So,
exactly. No, of all the people, they are heading the charge into all this.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, in the end, it's as, you know, what I'm hoping the lessons that people will eventually learn, and clearly they are learning this because these things are becoming more and more prominent, is, you know, figure out your audience, make the thing for them, they will find it, and other people who like that kind of thing will find it as well. And if there are people that don't like it, that's fine, but just because it wasn't made for you doesn't mean it's wrong, or even that it's pandering. It's you weren't the target audience.
Yeah. And the rest of the story is, one of the things that I love about going to conventions is that if you dig down deep enough, you're going to find somebody that will remember that one particular whatever it was that had half a season 20 years ago, and they know everything about it, and they love it to pieces, and they can tell you every single thing that you never wanted to know about that particular thing. And you can do that for everything that's out there.
Sure.
There is something out there for most straight white men, straight white women. And slowly ever so slowly, we are broadening that diversity. And that's a great thing, because there are so many stories out there that are worth being told.
Yeah.
So, one last thing, actually. I want to kind of go full circle back, because I just had one other thought as far as conventions and it being convention season.
Okay.
There was a lot of talk, at least around the holiday season, around buying local and shopping local.
Sure.
You know, buy local goods from local merchants. Yay. And I'm not just saying that because my wife's a local artist. But there's a drive towards keeping it local, keeping it within your community. Yes, we are lucky that we have things like Emerald City Comic Con and Sakura Con and Norwest Con. And there is this whole world of small, local-run, locally-owned, volunteer conventions that love the hell out of stuff. I mean, there's the star. There's the Sherlock Holmes convention. There's the Steam conventions. There's the pick a thing to love, and there's somebody making at least one con, probably three.
Yeah.
And those things deserve they're worth investigating. They're worth spending your time and your money on if you have the ability. The other thing to keep in mind is that we have gotten used to the large corporate mega corporations, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all these big corporations that will basically roll over and give you anything you want if you yell,
mm-hmm.
which sucks for the people that have to work customer service, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
So too, if you go in with a large con expectation to a small con, that is going to cause problems.
Yes, that is very true.
And that is where you get people misbehaving and not getting called out on it, where you have people damaging property and not getting evicted, where you have people, and that stuff right there, that stupid stuff, con attendees behaving badly, is what kills local cons the same way that going to big market stores is what's killing the local stores in an environment as well. Hmm. So, there, off a soapbox.
Okay.
What are you reading?
I can't remember the name. So, I was working through Night Vale.
Yes.
As we discussed. But, my darling sister is trying to derail me. Okay. So, she gave me a book, and I was going to, I can't remember the name. I haven't started reading it yet. Are you familiar with essentially a gothic romance line that is attributed to Marion Zimmer Bradley?
Ghostlight.
Thank you. Ghostlight.
Thank you, honey.
So there is a line, And there is a new book called Ghostlight.
Okay.
Now, Marion Zimmer Bradley did not actually read the book, write the book.
Okay.
The author, there was a series of murder mysteries that were collected in a book called Bell Book and Murder.
Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about those.
And it's those were murder mysteries set in the pagan community.
Sorry. Go on.
So Ghostlight is ghost written by the author of those novels.
Oh, awesome.
But it is more overtly supernatural.
Ah. So.
Keeping in the gothic romance and the fact that there is, with hints, you're going to, ready?
Mm-hmm.
With hints of Jack Parsons, who we discussed last time.
Hey!
Because the main character is a woman whose father died during a botched magical working and has been spending her life trying to downplay his reputation, especially as many people think he's a fraud, but it looks like whatever he was doing is coming back to haunt her literally.
Awesome! And this is called Ghostlight?
Yes!
And do we know the author?
Well, the official... Officially, it's written by Marion Zimmer Bradley. I think Larissa is trying to find the name of the author of the Bast novels.
No.
No, she wasn't even... Oh, she's playing Sudoku. We would have to pull up the name. It's...
My phone's dead. Don't worry about it.
Anyway, but yeah, it's...
It's called Ghostlight.
Ghostlight, and I have not started reading it yet, but it is something that Jillian was very much pushing as an excellent read. Jillian, of course, being mistress of the gothic romance.
She is mistress of the gothic full stop, so.
So we the last time she guest hosted, we discussed her love of gothic romances, particularly her entire line of Harlequin satanic romances. You gotta love a book series where the seal on the side is a Baphomet.
Sure, why not? Because nothing says love like human sacrifice.
Right. Other than that, what are you reading?
Actually, after we finish recording this, I'm heading to the library, and I have a Neil Stephenson book that just came in.
Oh.
I don't even know how to pronounce it. Reamdy? It's Readme with the D and the M. It's not his most recent Seven Eves. It's the one prior to that. I'm finally getting it out from the library because there are no holds on it, which means I can have it for more than 4 weeks because this thing is 900 pages of Neil Stephenson with no editor. And I've tried reading it before and I can't read it in the amount of time I have it checked out from the library. So I want to give it another try. I want to have fun with it. Enjoy Neil Stephenson. I'm placing bets that if it's 900 pages, that approximately between 600 and 700 pages, a giant Deus Ex Machina will show up and solve all the problems.
Or, in other words, a Neil Stephenson book.
Exactly. And so I've got that, and then Seven Eves after that, and I received a copy of The Water Knife for Christmas from my brother-in-law, which is supposed to be a great book, but I look forward to reading that as well.
All right. So the only other thing covering our normal subjects, first episode of the new season of Wolf 359 has debuted.
Yes.
I have listened to it. You have not had a chance yet.
You say another word besides it's awesome, and I will kill you in your sleep.
It is pretty awesome. Okay. And also, I it's been fun. There have been a lot of posts on Tumblr recently from Mr. Urbina discussing a lot of the writing theory.
Yes.
Behind it, which I found very good. Also, we are a couple episodes into season 2 of the Black Tapes
mm-hmm.
podcast. So, and it's picking up right where it left off. And we discussed Tannis last week, so I don't see any reason to cover that again. Listen to last week's episode.
Yeah.
Last
fortnight's episode.
Yes.
So are we to the point of making the big announcement? Or
not yet.
Not yet.
We are very close.
We're
teeteringly close to announcing ours. I have somebody working on a logo. And I have another person working on getting our recording studio set up. It's just Jill and I haven't just made the decision to pull the trigger yet. When we do, you will be the first to hear, you being our listening audience.
Okay, then. You don't write. You don't call. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I know you're out there because I see the downloads. So with that and... Oh, I did want to say one thing. So last week...
Last time?
Last time, we had talked about awards won by Wolf359.
Yes.
And you had complimented Emma Shezarko.
Yes.
Apparently you complimented the wrong actress.
Oopsie.
It wasn't Emma, and I'm blanking on the other. It's not who played Loveless. It was... Anyway, somebody listens to our podcast. It was the person who actually ran that poll.
Oops.
And pointed out we got it wrong.
Oopsie. I'm terribly sorry. I apologize. I apologize profusely. Congratulations to the person who won it. Whoever that is.
I'm blank. I'll tell you.
You could correct me next time and we can...
Yeah.
We can actually call the person out by name.
So with that, again, everyone, thank you for listening. And if you want to get in touch with Daniel or I, we can be reached at the website www.fanboynewsnetwork.com.
You can correct us. You can send us recipes. You can tell us how much you really enjoy falling asleep to us talking on and on and on.
And with that, we'll be back in about 2 weeks. Thank you for listening, and you all take care.
Take care.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2016 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.